This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening. This is the evening edition, and I'm Umar Pagan Ampage Pagan. Ever since the horrific images of two jet planes slamming into New York's World Trade Center in 2001, people the world over started paying attention to the reality of terrorism. And though much has been done to combat terrorist activities since then, the use of vehicles to carry out these attacks is unfortunately still prevalent. Trucks, cars, vans, almost every mode of transportation has been used. And now, more than ever, governments are working tirelessly to use technology in combating crime and terrorism. This was exactly what was discussed at the recently concluded Malaysia Auto Show 2017, held back in November. And one of the speakers invited to make the panel was this man.
Philip Opperman, and I'm the CEO of Recovery Tag. What's yours?
Ezra Zayed spoke to him when he was down in Kuala Lumpur, and the both of them got straight into it, asking Philip what micro dots are and how that works in the larger scheme of fighting terror attacks.
Okay. Micro technology is a very old technology. It was used in World War I, World War II, and it was used for the transfer of covert information. It's very small. It's the size of it's 1 mole by 1 mole. So you could fit a lot of information on there. Mm. And it was used for covert operations, World War I, World War II. What we use that technology for, and it's a really simple technology, is we put a single number on it now, which is linked to a VIN number in a vehicle. Now, the biggest thing on a vehicle is they get cannibalized or chopped up, chop shops.
Yes.
You want all the parts to be able to identify it back to the original VIN number, which is your unique number on any vehicle. So what we do, we put 15,000 in the vehicle. So it's not on the outside or in the paint. It's within on the firewall, the chassis, the boot, the bonnets, all over. So what it does in actual fact, it contaminates that vehicle. So if that vehicle gets stolen, and also it's used for warranties, you believe it or not. So it's used for positive stuff as well, to prove warranties. But if the vehicle gets stolen and a part gets found, that unique number is linked to the VIN number of the vehicle. So you can straight away check if that vehicle is stolen or not because of the unique number. And that number, VIN number, that is associated with the original VIN number of that vehicle. So if the VIN number has been changed due to cloning or whatever, you can still ascertain the original VIN number of that vehicle. And even if it's a part lying in a scrapyard, you can link it back to the vehicle.
Now, how effective has this particular initiative been?
Very effective. It's when we first launched it in South Africa, crime started dropping, but then it started increasing again. But what it allows us to do, and effectively microdotting is an identification product. So it identifies the original VIN, which allows law enforcement to then take it further with case numbers and so on. What it does, say for example, you've got a pound, you've got a whole lot of vehicles in there, you don't know if they're stolen or what, you can identify it's stolen and who the original owner was. Now, it might be an insurance company and they've paid out a claim. So they want that vehicle back so they can salvage it and bring money back into the pot to reduce their loss ratios. So that's what it's being used for. So before, when about 70% of those vehicles, they couldn't identify, they were being crushed up and just being destroyed. Now that's dropped to about 30%. So that difference is going back into the economy in terms of the insurer's salvage and so on. Also, if I'm uninsured, I want my car back if the police find it. I mean, you really want it back.
Yeah.
And that's what it allows it to do now. And the police don't want to keep your vehicle. They actually want to give it back. They want to get rid of the stuff in the yards. And that's how simple it is.
And when we look at how microdotting has played its role in combating terrorism, what's the link there?
Okay. Very important, any terrorism, and car bombs are one of your, it's the worst nightmare you can have.
Yes.
So when a car bomb's gone off, the start of the investigation is critical to get it to the investigation as quick as possible. And what you need to do is identify what that vehicle was. Now, when you've had a massive car bomb, you've got hardly anything left. You get one part. You can identify from that microdot number the original VIN. From that VIN number, you know where it was stolen, and it was normally stolen within a 3 weeks of prior to the bomb.
Right.
It's then left to cool off, and then it's used for these activities. So you, what it allows the police to do and law enforcement is to straight away identify that vehicle as quick as possible to start that investigation. Whereas before, if there was nothing, they'd have to find something and try and put together...
Piece it together as a puzzle.
Yes, as a puzzle. That could take a week, depending on the vehicle. But what we did in South Africa, we tested it in 2006, where we took a car, and it was overseen by the army and the police. They put 20 kilograms of C4 into this vehicle. We microdotted it. They put 20 kilograms of C4, and they blew this car up.
Right.
So we went down to this car. I mean, it was scary, that bomb. We went down. Straight away, we could identify that vehicle within 30 seconds of finding just the petrol cap, for example. There was a microdot on it. Checked the microdot number, got original VIN. Done.
Wow.
So it was really quick. So that was the proof of the pudding, you know?
So the rationale of what you've just explained to me seems to make a lot of sense.
Yes.
Yet it seems that not every car manufacturer or every country implements this particular thing. Has it caused any controversy, or have there been concerns about introducing this particular approach?
Do you know what's happened? Your car manufacturers have suddenly realized that they got a social responsibility.
Right.
Now, yes, it's fine if you've got 12.5% of your vehicle's sales in 1 year is replacement vehicles due to theft. You don't want that advertised, but you want to actually make sure that the security of your vehicle is good. The buy-in on the microdotting from OEM level was actually quite good, because they suddenly realized that you've got a responsibility towards your consumer. You don't want to put a consumer in one of your cars if it's a high-risk vehicle. So how do you limit the risk? So this is one of the ways of doing it. And the microdot technology at OEM level, the cost of it, especially when it's being fitted at OEM level, is
minuscule.
Minuscule compared to... And OEMs are very cost sensitive, right down to a screw, to a nut, to a bolt.
Right.
So the buy-in was quite big on their side, but they bought in, and now it runs smoothly. And it doesn't upset the build times or anything like that. That's critical, because as soon as you slow down a build on a vehicle, it costs money, increases the cost, which then gets passed on to the consumer. So
nobody's happy.
Nobody's happy. That's not a win-win. Yes.
After the break, Ezra shifts the conversation a little to cover Philip's life before he was dealing with microdots, back when he was with the South African Police Force. Stay tuned to the Evening Edition on BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
I'm Mwapaganampake Pagan, and this is the Evening Edition. Featured on the show this evening is Philip Opperman, the CEO of Recovery Tag. What's yours? They specialize in microdots and radio frequency identification in vehicles, basically the kind of stuff that helps with vehicle theft, which happens to be the MO of terrorists. Philip was part of the panel that was down here during the Malaysia Auto Show 2017 to talk about using technology to combat crime and terrorism. Ezra got the lowdown from Philip, but the conversation shifted to Philip's past career when he was part of the South African Police Force. And that's part of the conversation we're jumping back into right now.
Now, Philip, before this, you were with the South African Police Force, and now you're still doing work that's all about combating crime. Was this something that you had always wanted to do?
You know, I come from the field, the coalface of investigation. And you know, those days, investigation is all about preparing a case, finding the suspect, arresting the suspect. Then the work starts preparing the case for court, because you want a conviction.
Yes.
So, and that trail is quite a trail. And in 2000, in South Africa, it was an all-time high hijackings and theft. And I thought, what can we do to try and curb this? And going back to old policing techniques, it's your crime prevention strategies, which means you raid the unsavory sections.
Yes.
And, of course, you pull out, you'll get your stolen property there, mm-hmm. or visible policing. So those were the two sides. So the
visible policing for preventive and deterrent measures.
That's it. If you see a policeman walking down the road, the crime shifts away from that area, so the old beat patrol, which isn't happening anymore. And then we had the neighborhood watches where we used to write on, they put the ID number, they engrave on the television screen, for example, on the back of the television. So that was sort of the start of it. So I was, I tried to say, how can we put lots of those engravings? Because if you got one engraving, they remove it and it defeats the object.
Right.
So how do you put lots of engravings so they can't remove it? And it's tiny tags with a unique number. Mm. But all those tags must have the same number and spread across there. So say, for example, on a television screen set, a flat screen TV, you can put 1,000 microdots. The criminals, they're very lazy, but they try and remove it. They can't remove all of them. The law enforcement only has to find one.
Wow.
To identify the serial number and the owner.
It's a numbers game.
That's all it is, yeah.
Wow.
So contamination is a quite a strong word, but that's what you're actually doing to any asset. I mean, it's even being used on cattle, goats, and sheep in stock theft environments. So it can be used anywhere. It's got a lot of purposes, a lot of applications that you can use it for. But all law enforcement type stuff.
And, you know, you spoke about the crime rates in South Africa. And, you know, there's an unfortunate tag, in relation to crime and, you know, in places in South Africa.
Yeah.
Talk to us about some of the underlying reasons or maybe even socioeconomic conditions behind, you know, these crime rates in South Africa. What were you observing?
You know, it's very much to do with unemployment in a country. People need to eat.
Yeah.
So you've got crime out of necessity, and then you've got a massive, and this is worldwide, is the drug problem. Addiction. Drug addiction, can't work, need money to buy more drugs, so what's the next thing, best thing you
repeat,
do?
Repeat.
Yep. Normally children and steal from the parents, but now if your parents aren't wealthy because you've got all this entry-level drugs coming in, the meth, which is highly addictive stuff coming in,
mm-hmm.
They can't steal from their parents, so now they have to go to the wealthier neighborhoods and sell. And that is a massive, massive problem. So it's all, crime is stimulated by a whole lot of things, but one of your biggest things is your unemployment rates, where you have got people out of necessity driven into crime. And of course, in crime, vehicle theft is one of your most lucrative.
Hmm.
I mean, you know, a car, if they've stolen a car and they've sold it, they'll sell it for 3,000 Rand, but the syndicate bosses are the guys who make the money out of it.
Yeah.
So these foot soldiers are the ones that are doing all the dirty work. So what you actually got to do with any sort of crime like that, you got to cut off the head of the snake. So you got to get it right to the top and cut that off. And, you know, in society today, one syndicate, you close them down. There's another syndicate who was in competition to them, who just moves in and takes over their territory.
Right.
It's the most frustrating thing. So
And police work just, it never ends because...
It never ends,
and,
you're right.
And the work that's required, that really needs attention, something that you mentioned, you know, unemployment, wage inequality, and that's something that you'd like to think that the politicians and legislators are trying to introduce, but, you know, the crime work and the police work continues on decades and decades.
And, you know, when it's managed from a government level, for example, so say, for example, crime, vehicle crime is now coming down. What's the first thing they do? They cut budgets on the vehicle investigation side. So now they reduce the size of those task force. They down. Those people now become unworked. And, of course, automatically, it starts increasing again.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got to wait another year for budgets to instead of when the going's good, leave those task force in there. So now they're not focusing on investigation anymore. They can focus on crime prevention and maintain and keep that crime down. And, you know, these criminals, they're very, very clever. And you've got to try and stay one step ahead of them all the time. And it's difficult, especially when you've got budget constraints from, say, law enforcement sides, task force are being disbanded because now there's not a need anymore, and that type of thing. It's a vicious circle.
And, of course, right now, you know, when we talk about criminals and crime, there's a fine line between those who graduate towards the terrorist level, and that's a whole different field, but also similar. And South Africa has had a lot of experience with that.
We've gone through everything.
Yeah.
So, but normally your terrorism isn't really associated with a crime, but where it is associated is the vehicle that they're going to use.
Yes.
It's got to be, they steal it.
Right.
It's then parked and it's cooled off. So in case, because now we've got tracking systems. If nothing happens on the vehicle, then it can be used to perpetrate the crime. And terrorism worldwide died down, but now it's starting to flare up again. And it's going to become a problem. I mean, you'll see it's changed from car bombs to driving vehicles into crowds.
Right.
I mean, it's
so I mean, just, you know, using vehicles as weaponized vehicles.
Yes.
I mean, we were just so recently introduced in 2001 when a commercial airline flies into a building.
Correct.
And you know, I'm trying to think about all these crime prevention methods. It's a whole feat of engineering that you need to consider, all these safety mechanisms, and staying one step ahead is such a difficult challenge.
And one of the only way to do that is to increase your intelligence, because you need to know potential threats before they happen, and that is intelligence. And with technology where it is today, there's a lot of different ways you can package intel together to identify risk areas of, you know, you look at the airports today. I mean, if you go into the United States, you've got your shoes off, your socks, you really feel bad when you're going in there.
Yeah.
But that's not going to stop a terrorist.
Right.
You know, it's not. It just makes it us uncomfortable when we go through there.
Right.
But terrorists are going to go through, you know, borders. If you really want a terrorist not to get in there, you've got to put up a massive wall with a small gate. That's it. Otherwise, they're going to come through. So if the intention's there, they're going to get through. You know, so the intel is the most important side.
So in recent years, though, there's been a lot of positive trends when it comes to combating crime in South Africa. What have been the key elements that have precipitated that change?
Well, you know, if you look at the World Cup.
That was a huge test.
It was a huge test. And we were very worried because, you know, you've got pickpockets. We're a third world country. So you've got pickpockets, you've got muggings, all that type of thing. The best thing they did there was the visible policing. Police don't like using helicopters for proactive use because it's expensive. But in a case like that, you put a helicopter up and it creates that presence. And it keeps the common criminals out. And that type of thing is just a tiny component of it. It's got to work all together. The other thing is your crime prevention. You need the raids. You need to raid unlicensed liquor taverns, that, because what happens there, that's where the drugs, the stolen property gets found, all that type of thing. And you've got to keep cleaning it up, making them uncomfortable. As soon as you're not raiding them anymore, it just grows into the cesspit of, like, it's scary. So that's the way to do it. That's how you've got to keep it clean. Visible policing and your crime prevention is critical.
We're heading for the news next, and after that, Ezra continues the conversation with Philip Opperman about the one troubling issue we have in common with South Africa, custodial deaths. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bombing frustrated minds, BFM 89.9.
This is the Evening Edition. I'm Umar Pagan, Ampike Pagan. My colleague Ezra Zayed is speaking about the use of vehicles in terrorism, and his guest is Philip Opperman, the CEO of Recovery Tag, What's Yours? Philip was part of a panel that spoke about global vehicle theft during the Malaysia Auto Show 2017, held last month in November. What's interesting about Philip is not only does he specialize in micro technology and develops micro dots for vehicles as part of an enhanced security feature, he was also a part of the South African police force before this. And with the high crime rate in South Africa, the country's reputation has always been unfortunately tainted where security is concerned. Ezra spoke to Philip about this just before our news break earlier, and we're getting back into that conversation right now.
Yeah, we're seeing, at least in this part of the world, you know, a lot of terrorist attacks, you know, happening in the region, whether it's Jakarta, whether it's south of Philippines, in Malaysia alone, we've, been, I guess, foiling a couple of attacks, but there is a growing concern that it's not a matter of if, but when.
When.
Are there, you know, Malaysia is a developing country and you know, we're always concerned about the rise of terrorism attacks. Are there ways in which countries can better prepare themselves in managing this?
Your biggest thing is you've got to share information. And your intelligence is critical to this whole thing.
Each country has its own unique problems in sharing its information and intelligence.
And they're jealous about that information. That's unfortunately, yeah. So as soon as you remove, because this type of thing doesn't have a border. It's not stopped by a border.
Right.
Borders are, It's not there anymore. So as soon as you see, for example, something happening in Germany, it's going to happen in Europe. It's, you know, there's no more borders.
Mm.
And the intel is critical. So your intelligence agency, gathering all information, one of your biggest things is as soon as you see a spike of convenient crimes, like a theft of a bicycle, theft of washing off a washing line at night, in an area, you know there's something going to start. So if you can stop the petties, it'll stop the major crime moving in, because it's like a magnet. It pulls it all together. And that we've seen. We've got experience in that. If you keep away the petties away, the rest goes away. Terrorism, unfortunately, it's really more reliant on your intel. Intelligence gathering to proactively, you've got to prepare yourself, because like you say, it's not if, it's when. And you need to make sure that when is going to happen, you've got the necessary guards in place to prevent that happening and preserve life. Because, I mean, sure, it's a very, very terrorism. You know, one man's terrorism is another man's freedom fighter. So it's also quite a debate of, you know.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
But as soon as you start hurting innocent people, I'm sorry, that to me, that's no more. Yeah.
Now, there are many cases of deaths in custody as well. That's unfortunately something that Malaysia and South Africa have in common. Mm. And our government this year in Malaysia shared that there are over about 1,500 deaths in custody between 2010 and 2017. And, you know, we have regulatory agencies, you know, enforced to keep the police in check, but it lacks the necessary bite to be effective. And there's a push for an independent commission, and understandably, there's that traditional pushback from the police force itself. Mm. There are many countries, Hong Kong comes to mind, in trying to sort of, you know, reconfigure that relationship. How difficult is it? Because, you know, many people perhaps underappreciate the good work that the police force does, yet change is so difficult to happen for an institution like the police force. So where are those tiny baby steps? Where are those small wins?
If you look at, for example, these deaths while incarcerated, if you look at the average jails and prisons, they are really overcrowded. The whole idea of prison is for rehabilitation. So, but how can you rehabilitate when you've got syndicates working within the prison system? Mm. They've been removed from society, but he's still operating his syndicate from within.
This is true.
You know, it's a major thing. And of course, you are going to have, you know, there's you do get police violence and that type of thing. But it's not that they just go out and violently hurt someone. It's, you know, it may be affecting an arrest or anything like that. But your deaths more in custody are definitely related to the overcrowding. I mean, we've seen that. Overcrowding creates that. And you actually, what happens, a prison becomes a university. Because say that's my first conviction of car theft. I go into prison. Now I discuss it. Oh, they caught me for, I stole a car. And they say, but yeah, you were stupid. You should have done this. Do you know about the secret numbers? Do you know about this? Do you know about that?
Right.
So they educate me now. So when I come out with I'm on parole. So because the prisons are overcrowded, so my sentence is halved. Half of that, I come out, I'm eligible for parole. I come out with new enthusiasm. Now I've learned a lot.
And new information.
And unfortunately, that is what's happening, you know. And it's the rehabilitation. If you concentrate more on the rehabilitation side and saying it's wrong, rather come out, look for work, do this, do that. But, you know, nobody.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think when you're talking about overcrowding in jails and rehabilitation, on both accounts, that requires an investment and it requires a certain amount of cost. Yet it feels, I just don't, maybe perhaps with the way public leaders and politicians would like to articulate themselves in front of a microphone, it doesn't sound as strong and tough and sexy if you're saying we're going to rehabilitate everybody in that particular area. But it seems that there's evidence to suggest that rehabilitation is the way to go, because so many folks are re-entering society after they've served their time.
There's a lot of success factors. And rehabilitation, you know, it's a task. Because the person has to become, they got to understand that I want to be rehabilitated. I made a mistake. Normally, your sentences are based. It's a It's a preventative. It's a deterrent. So if I know if I steal a car, I'm going to jail for 15 years, I'm going to be very careful not to steal cars. Or if I do, it's got to be, you know. But if that sentence is now 5 years, and when I go, I get convicted, I'm in there, it's halved, and then I'm eligible for parole after 1 year. I mean, it's worth the risk on the value of the vehicle.
That's right.
So that's, you know, that's where your law enforcement and your Department of Justice need to work together. But at the same time, you've got overcrowded jails. So, you know, it's a catch-22. Do the government invest more in bigger jails? You know, that type of thing. So it's really a hot topic, a debatable topic. But, yeah, there's no real recipe.
Yeah. You know, just in your experience with South Africa, having served in the police force, there must be, you know, signs that you're optimistic about, I guess, the general overall direction about the reduction of crime and I guess some of the initiatives that are happening, not just in the police force, but within the communities as well. Are you optimistic about how things are going?
Yes.
Or is it just more complex than that?
It's a lot more complex. Right. But, you know, in South Africa, people are optimistic by nature. We're not the pessimists. Like, I don't know if Europe you've ever been. They're just pessimists.
It's in the DNA somewhere.
It's in DNA somewhere, yeah. But South Africans are optimists. And you've got a lot of entrepreneurs there as well. You know, so if you've got to highlight and concentrate on the strong points of any society. I mean, there's a lot of initiatives happening there. There's a lot of success cases. Black economic empowerment has worked well. You know, all that type. And there's a lot of that. But your problem is still your unemployment. You know, if unemployment also can stimulate entrepreneurs, but you need to push that button. So creating awareness, and everyone's an entrepreneur, but it might be, I mean, for example, it might be I like art, or it could be I like coding, IT.
Yeah.
If people just are pushed into the right direction or given the right guidance, they can empower themselves and work for themselves. With the way technology is increasing in today's life, I mean, there's endless opportunities out there. But your society has to be optimistic and embrace it and do it.
Philip, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
That was Ezra Zayat speaking to Philip Opperman, the CEO of Recovery Tag, What's Yours, about combating terrorism using technology and the similarities between both South Africa and Malaysia when it comes to crime. As always, if you missed any part of this program, you can download our podcast using our BFM app or from our website. Stay tuned for more on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.